Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. This is Ohio Exopolitics, and I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're going to be talking about America Under Siege, Civil War in America in 2017. One of the prophecies of Edward Albert Meyer is that around 2020, the United States would start to break up and that we would see two civil wars. And eventually we would break up into, I think, five different areas Billy talks about. And there's a very interesting movie that's been put together called America Under Siege, Antifa. And it explains some of the activities of this. It's essentially a terrorist group called Antifa. We're also going to talk about the Might of Thoughts, reincarnation, and a bit about Contact Report 663, which talked about the recent election in America, and I'm going to play some clips as well. If you're new to the show, then, and I always repeat and on this program because there's so much detailed information related to the Billy Meyer case, so I repeat a lot, and there's usually new information that's added. But Billy Meyer is 80 years old. He lives in a little tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidruti, which is about 45 minutes east of Zurich. He's written about 50 books, over 2,000 contact reports. He's taken over 1,000 photographs of extraterrestrial ships in and around his home there in Switzerland. The most impressive part of the Meyer case is not the photographs. The photographs are incredible. The most impressive part of the Meyer case, in my opinion, is the spiritual information about the spiritual teachings, particularly. Billy's story begins when he was about 5 years old, actually earlier than that, right around 1943. He started to get telepathic messages from a man named Svath, and Billy would see the image of this elderly man in his mind, and he would hear what he had to say, and eventually Billy met with Svath. Svath landed his silvery pear-shaped craft in a field not that far from Billy's home. Billy lived in farther north in Switzerland at this time in an area called Bulak. Svath was an extraterrestrial human from a race of humans, beings that called themselves the Plejaren. And the Plejaren are from our universe, in what's called a different space-time configuration. So our universe has seven different space-time configurations you could roughly think of as dimensions. And these extraterrestrials, which they are human, just like us, were from a different space-time configuration, and Svath was about nearly 1,000 years old when he met Billy. His world is called Era. It's some 80 light years from our Pleiades in a different space-time configuration. Unfortunately, Billy's contacts are often mistakenly called the Pleiadians, but they're really not from our Pleiades. they had established contact with Billy because they were associated to him in previous lives. And not only that, they had been they have the technology to identify and view something that every human being has called the spirit form, as it's called. It's called the Geist form, and the spirit form lives in the center of our middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. And you can also refer to it as your spiritual consciousness. And they had recognized his spiritual consciousness incarnating on the earth for the past 13,000 years, and they had helped him in his previous lives because they knew that he had a reoccurring mission in his lifetime as kind of a prophet and a teacher. And he had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And in each one of these previous lives, he taught something called the teaching of the spirit, which deals with the way our universe works, basically. It talks about reincarnation. It talks about the what they call the universal consciousness, which we unfortunately here on Earth call God. They talk about certain creational natural laws that exist in our universe, and we'll discuss those in a little more detail later. Now, every human being has what's called a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. Billy's spiritual consciousness is very ancient, and these extraterrestrials recognize that. And they were here to help this little boy, Edward Albert Meyer, grow up to fulfill his purpose again as what's kind of called the universal prophet. There are multiple universes, and I know this is a lot of information coming to you at once if you're new to the show, but our universe, for example, has a parallel universe, a sister universe, called the Tao universe. And there are many universes. So reality is much more complicated than we'd probably like to know or even admit. But Sfath met with Billy physically the first time in about 1945. He brought Billy up into a ship, and then the ship went into lower Earth orbit. And again, Billy was taught about his previous lives. Sfath told Billy he had been the people that we call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And Billy was told in this life he would be a teacher and a prophet again, but he was also told about the difficulties he would face. He was told that his wife would turn against him, that there would be something like 20 attempts on his life. But eventually, his teaching would become popular on the earth, but there would be a transition period called the third millennium, which lasts about 800 years. And during this 800 years would be the slow spreading of this information all over the earth. And what it would bring is a kind of prosperity and stability to the earth as we learn what are called the creational natural laws. And I'll just rattle through those quickly since I brought up the topic. The first law is the law of love, not a romantic love, but more of the love between friends or family, for example. It's a love based on reverence. And there are beautiful passages in the Meyer information that explain this love. For example, it says, love is the highest principle in creation. And everything exists in absolute logic. Everything through that love exists in absolute logic. Every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And that the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love, so that at every moment the human being has the opportunity to come up against the radiating love of creation. And there's a passage in one of Billy's writings called The Goblet of Truth that's entitled What the Truth Knows to Say. And it kind of explains this love, and it explains the process of reincarnation. It says, rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And that many of the creatures are aware of each other and connected to one another by what are called swinging waves. And if you've ever seen birds move in a flock as a unit, or fish move in a school instantly together, then you have a notion of what these swinging waves are. These are also called mental fluidal powers, and they radiate from your brain, and they radiate into the environment around you, and they settle themselves into the books and the furniture and the clothes that you wear, even the trees in your yard have your mental fluidal energies. So our minds have tremendous power associated with them, and our thoughts have tremendous power. And we're all human beings are connected subconsciously in what's called a we form. And our thoughts have an incredible power. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought into fruition. And one of the, what I think is the most important things to learn from the spiritual teaching is how to control your thoughts. Because out of your thoughts come all the circumstances of your life. It's not the environment and the circumstances of your life that affect you, but you, through your thinking, affect your environment and affect the circumstances of your life. If your thoughts are neutral positive, then you will bring good circumstances in your life. If you have good thoughts, you'll have good feelings. And your good feelings will result in good habits. And good habits bring good circumstances into your life. For example, you are the master of your own destiny. I always say, I'm the master of my own destiny. I'm the forger of my own fortune. I create the good circumstances in my life through good thoughts, good feelings, and good habits. I'm confident. I'm optimistic. I'm relaxed. I'm cheerful. I'm enthusiastic. I'm thankful. These are neutral, positive thoughts. And this will cause your consciousness to be like a garden, like a healthy garden full of many good plants. So the goal is to strengthen, to clarify, to nurture the good thoughts. Because through good thoughts, you will bring in good circumstances into your life. What I think, I make real. I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune. I create my own good luck. What I think becomes real. So the power of our thoughts is very, very critical. Your thoughts should be neutral positive, not completely positive, nor completely negative, but an equalized. The negative and the positive are two forces that belong together, and they should not be separated. If you try and start to look at things in a very negative way or an overly positive way, you will become what's Assartung in the German, or meaning out of control of the good human nature. So what we want to do, We want to stay in the neutral positive balance. All of the universe tries to remain in balance. And our thinking should always remain in balance. So that is one of the creational natural laws that I talked about earlier, is the law of harmony. You should have perseverance and persistence and endurance. You should have harmony. You should be satisfied. You should be calm. You should have hope. These ideas will produce a harmony, a balance in your thinking. And through your good thoughts, you can bring good circumstances into your life. Healthy thinking is so incredible and really important. And one of the big problems here on the earth is we're ill in our consciousness. And because we're ill in our consciousness, we're creating very, very many problems for ourselves. One of the big problems that we're facing here, particularly in the United States, is a kind of breakdown in our government and a breakdown in the activities in our government. Let me, there's an interesting contact report. I didn't think I would get to it this quick, and I'm probably not entirely where I need to be to talk about this, but we've just had a very divisive election in the United States. Maybe 50% of the people were in support of a person known as Hillary Clinton. Another 50%, you could say, are in support of Donald Trump. The Meyer information says that there would have been a catastrophic global atomic war if Clinton would have won, and that choosing Trump over Clinton avoided this atomic war. And the Meyer information, this is Contact Report 663, says that Clinton harbors sneaky and evil warmongering thoughts against Russia, and would have carried out military actions against Russia, first in Syria, and then wanted to carry out attacks against Russia itself. So in our last election, we chose the lesser of two evils, and Billy was not allowed to talk too much about this at first. And there would have been attacks against Trump if Billy would have talked about this anymore. Billy says that Trump represents his own party, you could say, not the Republican Party. And Billy says that Trump is well-meaning, he's not evil, but Billy states that Clinton is sneaky and warmongering, and that we would have had an inevitable atomic war if Hillary would have got in office. So we're in a very difficult position right now, politically in the U.S. Billy calls Trump a catastrophic person. Now, exactly what that means, I'm not sure, but he says that he's not stupid or evil, but in many ways he's misinformed, for example, on climate change. So we're in a very difficult situation here on the earth. And I think what I'll do next is play a clip, which I think is absolutely fascinating. And it's going to take me just a few seconds to adjust to all this. It's called America Under Siege, and it talks about this group called Antifa, which was really trying to bring about the overthrow of the U.S. government. So here we go.
My name is Trevor Loudon. I'm a writer and filmmaker from Christchurch, New Zealand. I have spent the last several years in America and have addressed more than 400 audiences in over 40 states. My mission is to expose the influence of radical and terrorist groups in the mainstream political parties, academia, media, and the culture. In my recent travels, I've come across two phrases more and more often: Antifa and civil war. But who is Antifa? Why are they organizing? What are their goals? I knew from my 30 years of studying radical movements that Antifa would likely be connected to more mainstream leftist organizations. I knew that Antifa was a reincarnation of the so-called Black Bloc, a protest tactic where gangs of black-clad masked street protesters engage in anonymous violence. These were the anti-Iraq War radicals who rampaged through San Francisco's financial district in 2003. The Black Bloc were part of the Occupy Wall Street movement of 2011. They were responsible for massive amounts of damage and chaos. The Black Bloc came back after the 2016 presidential elections, this time as Antifa, even more violent, smashing property and viciously assaulting all those who opposed them. There was also another difference. Numerous reports from victims and media alike of police refusal to intervene in incidents of violence. I became increasingly appalled by regular displays of extreme violence and disgusted by a mainstream media which either ignored, excused, or even glorified the thuggery.
I think that a lot of people recognize that when pushed, self-defense is a legitimate response to white supremacist and neo-Nazi violence.
I decided to do some digging. I immersed myself in the deepest recesses of the internet. Then I reached out to some of Antifa's most prominent opponents. And even if I didn't agree with them on many things, I sought out the most active warriors against Antifa. Steve Dace is a political commentator, host of The Steve Dace Show on CRTV, and a nationally syndicated talk show host.
You know, so much of what we are living through now actually comes from what happened in Italy in the 20s and the 30s, where you saw the clashes between the fascists and the Marxists there. And that's where Antifa comes from, the anti-fascists, people that wanted to go after the Mussolini regime.
Leon Trotsky, creator and leader of the Soviet Red Army, formed the first Antifa-type units, groups of armed paramilitary thugs used to suppress opposition to communism in the years leading up to the Bolshevik Revolution. The Antifa concept was so successful that Trotsky spread it through Italy, Germany, and other European countries the communists were targeting for takeover. Antifa gained fame in the years prior to the Nazi takeover of Germany in 1933. The German Communist Party and the Social Democrats set up Antifa units to wage war on Hitler's street thugs, the brown shirts.
From an ideological perspective, it's a sibling rivalry. Hey, we're the thugs around here. No, we're the thugs. Hey, we're the gangsters here. No, we're the gangsters. Hey, we're the tyrants here. No, we're going to be the tyrants.
After the Nazis destroyed Antifa and the Communist Party, many former left-wing militants switched sides to the Nazis.
It would make sense they would switch sides to the Nazis because they have the same exact plan. They have the same exact schemes. They have the same exact devices. The only difference is which group gains control. And so ultimately, if the other group gains control of this battle of the wills, if you will, then, you know, if you can't beat them, join them.
One internal SA report claimed that 55% of the brown shirt ranks were former communists or socialists. They called them beefsteak Nazis, brown on the outside, red in the center. In the 1980s, black-clad, ski mask-wearing protesters known as the Anonymous rampaged through German streets protesting against visiting American President Ronald Reagan.
I have read and I have been questioned since I've been here about certain demonstrations against my coming, and I would like to say just one thing, and to those who demonstrate so, I wonder if they have ever asked themselves that if they should have the kind of government they apparently seek, no one would ever be able to do what they're doing again.
Well, that's just a brief introduction of this group called Antifa. And this is part of the predictions and prophecies of the Meyer case that have been going on for quite some time. So we've seen the the hurricanes and the fires predicted or the prophecies about those for the past two or three years, and now we're starting to see some of the signs that the United States may in fact break up. I'm certainly hoping that Billy's wrong about this. But one of the things that Billy predicts is that, and I should make the distinction about a prediction and a prophecy, and these are prophecies because prophecies are still possible. They're still open-ended. They may go either way. For example, there's a prophecy about two potential civil wars in the U.S. And again, a civil war is a war between citizens of the same country. The first U.S. Civil War was fought between 1861 and 1865 between the North and the South. And it was supposedly about slavery, and to a certain degree it certainly was, but it was also about the deep-rooted political and economic differences between the North and the South during that time. And now there's a Russian professor in political science named Igor Panarin, who has been predicting for quite some time that the U.S. would break up into five or so different groups. And the reason for his forecast is that the wealthier states withhold funds from the federal government because of social unrest, national division, and the intervention of foreign powers. The Meyer information talks about wealth inequality as one of the reasons for this civil war, for the profit maximization. In other words, our corporations are so focused on profit more than anything else, rather than the social good, irrationality and irresponsibility in our government, corrupt business leaders, huge government debt, and extremism among the youth, loss of morality, overpopulation. So let me again talk about this movie that we just heard a part of a clip from, America Under Siege, Antifa. It's a very informative documentary. Antifa came into being around 1990. And the Meyer information says, for example, in Contact Report 215 on line 236, that civil wars will be caused in France and Sweden because of gangs and organized criminal elements. And I really think Antifa is one of these organized criminal groups, and they've been around since World War II. Antifa uses something called concept creep. So first they vilify their enemy by calling them some name. They dehumanize the enemy. For example, anyone that voted for Trump is now called a fascist, a racist, or a sexist. And then the activist group expands the meaning of these words in order to meet their agenda. This is a technique called concept creep. For example, a fascist can be used for Nazis, but then it's also expanded to be for anyone who supports capitalism or the free enterprise system. So one of the prophecies of the Henoch prophecies, Contact Report 215, is that misery will come to the United States when there will be two civil wars. One will follow the other, and the United States will break apart into five different territories. So this is one of the prophecies that I hope is certainly not going to come around. I'm hoping that through the people starting to understand the spiritual teachings, that we can avoid some of these very, very disturbing things. One of the interesting experiences that young Edward Albert Meyer had, even in some ways just as interesting as going up into the ship with Spoth, was about something Billy experienced on a mild night in May in 1941 at about 3 a.m. when he woke up, a little boy about 4 years old at this age. He wakes up, in the middle of the night. He crawls out of a lower window in his bedroom. He sits down on a bench and he looks up at a beautiful starry sky. And he heard a voice in his head say, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times, I've lived among the stars." And Billy suddenly knew who he was and what his mission on the earth was. And later he would recognize that these impulses that were coming to him were coming to him from what's called the storage banks. So there's informational storage banks associated with our planet, with our solar system, with our universe, with our galaxy. And the universal consciousness literally sends information out through these storage banks. If you have the sensitivity to pick up on these impulses. So Billy, first of all, was seeing the light of the stars, but he recognized that this light from the stars was in the visible spectrum, but that there was another light that he would later call the love of creation. And that this the impulses from the storage banks were allowing him to pick up on this love. And what I tell people is, and I know it's hard to do because we're all so busy, to take the time to go out into nature, to pick up on these impulses of creation. See, creation literally radiates love. Even though it's called in the German a Wesenheiten, Billy calls it a Wesenheiten, meaning that it doesn't even control its own evolution. The creation, as it evolves according to this very fixed pattern. For example, our universe, this creation, is expanding, and it will expand for 155 trillion years. It's been expanding for 46 trillion years. Our universe is 46 trillion years old. And these events, they occur according to some fixed pattern. Now, a human being uses his free will very much in terms of his evolution. For example, there are 7 evolutionary steps that human beings go through. We're way back on stage 2, but there are 7 steps, and it takes 40 to 60 million years to get through the first 5 steps of evolution. So what happens is, when you physically die, the spirit form comes out of the body and it takes with it your consciousness from the previous life, and it goes into this area, this other dimension called the fine matter world, a band of energy around your planet, so to speak. And this, every spirit form has a place in this other dimension called the overall consciousness block. And it brings your consciousness with it from the previous life. This is your material consciousness that it brings with it. And what it does is it starts the process of taking and going through everything that you did in that previous life. Now, this is a process that can take a fair amount of time. For example, if you lived 100 years, it often takes 150 years to go through all these events, because what it's doing is it's basically taking everything that you learned and distilling it down into what are called these essences. So the essence of what you learned in terms of love, in terms of discipline, in terms of honesty, in terms of how nature works, everything you learned in terms of optimism and a sense of satisfaction, all of these things that you learned from your previous life are being processed in the fine matter world, in the spiritual dimension, and they're being distilled down into their essences. So the essence of love that you learned, the essence of wisdom, of discipline, of optimism, of confidence, all these lessons that you learned are then absorbed into your spirit form. Now, the spirit form can be considered a fragment of this universal consciousness. And this fragment, the spirit form of the universal consciousness, goes through many, 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 many lifetimes, absorbing the wisdom that you got out of your last material lifetime. So the spirit form takes a lifetime and a half in the spirit realm under ideal circumstances to absorb everything that you've learned in that previous life. Everything you learned about love, everything you learned about nature, maybe even technical things that you learned. All of that is absorbed by the spirit form. And that becomes part of the spirit form's strength and its wisdom. So each lifetime, the spirit form grows in strength and wisdom. And the next thing that the spirit form does, after it's absorbed all of this wisdom from the previous life, it goes about creating a new personality for the human being. It goes about creating a new consciousness for the human being. And it takes all these essences of everything that it learned in the previous life and programs that into your subconscious. It's creating for you a new personality and a new consciousness. And deep within, even though you're a child again, when you're born again, in your subconsciousness is all the essences of everything that you learn. Now, typically, you don't remember your previous lives, and this is for good reason, because it would be overwhelming to the point of insanity to deal with all the issues and things that you did in your previous life. Every lifetime, we have to focus on the current life. So after the spirit form goes through kind of this process of distilling down all the previous life experiences, absorbing that, and taking those essences and programming them into the subconscious, it creates a new conscious mind, a new unconscious mind, a new subconsciousness, of course, and a new personality. This is your whole consciousness, which it creates. So the spirit form now has a new material consciousness for a new material lifetime. And the universal consciousness will pull that spirit form into the appropriate body. Now, what's interesting, my understanding is that you will incarnate into a situation that will be conducive to your evolution. So, for example, in your previous lifetime, if you were a nuclear physicist, you will not reincarnate as some aboriginal person in Australia or as some primitive person in the Congo. You will reincarnate into a set of circumstances that will be conducive to your incarnation and your evolution. And the spirit form that we have is typically something like 4 million years old here on the earth. So you've had many, many lifetimes. So one of the things, when I was talking earlier, when Billy was a very young boy, is one of the things he said was, he heard these words formed on his lips. He said, since ancient times, you've lived among the stars. And he said he suddenly knew who he was, how I am, and what my mission is on this earth, he said. So this is the material consciousness of this young boy understanding these impulses that were coming out of the universal consciousness. And one of the next thing he said was very, very profound. He said, everything which exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of the mighty universal consciousness, simply called creation. And he went on to say that he understood that truth was found in the innermost self and the innermost intellect, in your thoughts, in your contemplations, and your feelings. And he learned a sense of self-responsibility at this point, and that we have a responsibility to fellow human beings, to animals, to plants, and towards what are called the creational laws and recommendations. Billy also had kind of a mentor as he was growing up, which is very interesting. This pastor named Pastor Rudolph Zimmerman, who was also getting telepathic contacts from these groups, this group of extraterrestrial humans, again called the Pleiaren. Again, I'm back in about 1945. It's World War II. I'm still talking about Billy's earlier life. One day he was outside with his father. Again, he's in the area of Bulak near a little village, I believe, called Niederflux. And he felt this strange desire to look high above the eastern horizon for something. And he had a very mysterious feeling at this point. It was a very strange desire. And the sky was very blue and it was rather warm. It was a summer morning. And for 10 or 15 minutes, he's looking in the sky. And then his eyes fastened onto something peculiar. From out of the sky with tremendous speed came a silver craft. At first it looked like a giant metallic arrow, and it hovered over the 75 meter tall church steeple where he was, and it hovered there for a while. It was a gigantic, a very large flat metal disc. It was huge. It was about 200 to 300 meters. And then it disappeared to the west over what's called the Horrigan Forest, I guess, at this time. So this was an experience Billy had with his father. His father thought it was one of the potential weapons that Hitler had. Billy missed a lot of school as he was growing up at this time, and he would be punished very severely and intensely by his father because Billy was continually going on these contacts with Svoth. He spent a great deal of time skipping school, and Svoth told him he would have a very difficult mission. And one of the things that Billy did, or what Svoth did, is he told Billy that the people of the earth were entering into a very dangerous time. And this dangerous time is called the third millennium. It's a time when confusion and maliciousness will spread over the earth. So one of the things that Svoth did inside his ship was he put a device on Billy's head, which had very strange wires coming out of it. And Billy felt these very unusual forces penetrating into him, and he suddenly knew events that would take place in the future. What Svoth had done was put a device on his head that awakened abilities that he had in previous lifetimes. Billy's other personalities and other bodies and other lifetimes, he had done very similar work to what he was doing in this lifetime. The intention of the spiritual teachings of the Meyer case is to awaken the human race out of their sleep. We're kind of in a sleep here on the earth. And it's a sleep that, unfortunately, has very bad side effects if you stay in it too long. And I want to read just a couple of passages out of the Might of Thoughts that I thought were good. It says here, every thought which is formed in the consciousness or which enters it and establishes itself there develops into tremendous might, which is able to control everything. Once a thought has emerged, it continues and reproduces itself in order to create from it sooner or later an action or a quality and so forth which corresponds to it. He goes on later down on this page and says, thoughts emerge not only from inner stimuli, rather they also form themselves in the consciousness as a result of external perceptions, as a result of the external world of circumstances, as a result of which the inner world of thoughts comes about. Namely, as a result of the thoughts, which contain power and might in themselves, he or she is able to master or destroy his own life. So what happens here is that we have conscious thoughts and we actually have unconscious thoughts. And the problem is we cannot steer our unconscious thoughts. So if we let our thoughts drift, things will just pop up in our consciousness. They can be very negative. And through these negative thoughts, which will manifest a lot of times as fears, as anxieties, as doubt, as anger. If you've ever let your thoughts run out of control, you'll get these repeating thoughts and you can't hardly stop them. They keep coming back and coming back and coming back. One of the spiritual skills that we learn through time, and it takes a lot of time, is to learn to control these thoughts. There are techniques like wish dreams. If you remember a good time in your life, focus on that. You'll also, if you can say some of these things that I said earlier about I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, this can start to reestablish good thinking and you can start to circulate good thoughts in your mind because good thoughts lead to good feelings lead to good habits, and good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. And Elizabeth Moosberger was one of the people that wrote the foreword in this book called The Might of Thoughts. And she said, the book which lies before you is dedicated to humankind that's ill in its consciousness. And if you've ever studied the way things are going on the earth, it's obvious to see that we are ill in our consciousness. One of the skills that we have to remember is to be independent thinking. So do not get your thoughts from the television, the radio, the internet. Think for yourself. Always make up your own minds. And unfortunately, there's only very few people who really truly have their own thoughts anymore. And one of Billy's teachers, Billy had the mentorship of Sloth for 11 years. His second teacher, named Askett, who he met in 1953, told him something about independent thinking that I'd like to read with you quickly. It says, the human, meaning the human on earth, is still not capable with and fully understanding the truth. and he is not yet mature enough to know his future and approach it correctly. For that reason, the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him, as in equations, in order to make him think independently, whereby he slowly finds and recognizes the truth. So that's one of the reasons why there's so many prophecies in the Meyer case, to stimulate independent thinking. All of our might is anchored in our thoughts. And the human being is the forger of his own fortune. So we create our own luck by how we choose our thoughts and reinforce our thoughts. So we need to clarify our thoughts. We need to nurture our thoughts, strengthen the good, positive, neutral thoughts. We're always thinking we want it to be neutral, positive. So there's not the complete elimination of the negative. We recognize the negative. We see it as being there. And we have achieved a balance. And your balance will make you optimistic and confident and relaxed and cheerful and enthusiastic. And you'll be the creator of your own morality, your own character, your own personality. This again is a creational natural law called the law of harmony. We talked about another creational natural law called the law of love. Well, there's another law that the universal consciousness has created for our universe called the law of striving. So everything has to strive to survive. You have to work. You have to work at your physical body to keep it in physical health. You have to work at your consciousness in order to keep it healthy. We have to work to survive whatever our particular means of earning money is. The more you work, the more happiness in many ways you have. Now, of course, there's a balance with everything, but I wanted to read to you what it says here about striving. It says the creation itself, and this is in Billy's book called The Way to Live. And if you want to order these books, go to theyfly.com, send an email to Michael Horn, or go to one of the Figu sites. It says there's a Figu Switzerland, a Figu Australia, a Figu Canada, not a Figu in the U.S., though, but that's a whole other program. It says, and we're talking about striving again, the creation itself, as well as all its creatures, and these in heightened, is imbued with the power of the striving. In order to attain success, the future progress in that which is higher. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. In order to reach through incessant evolution that which is higher and absolutely fully developed, if you're not striving enough, most of the time, you will not be fulfilled. You will not be happy. If you're going through a time where you're very unhappy, I tell people, focus on your striving, on your work. Your work can be cleaning out your garage. It doesn't have to be anything profound always. But all areas of your life, focus on work. The greatest power in every single vision is there to serve the striving. We are vision. Truly, the striving is the great and enormous power itself. Striving is the Ur-law of all evolution. It's the most primitive ancient law. And striving is the power of the life in the sense of progress. If you don't have a sense of striving, you will not have a sense of progress in your life. You will not have happiness. Again, the striving is related directly to your happiness. So constantly be optimistic and confident. Constantly be striving. Take breaks. Do not work yourself to death. Always go for the balance. If striving is absent in some life form, then the power of the progress extinguishes, and thereby the sense of life will extinguish. Your life, your sense of happiness, is based on your striving. If a human being loses his or her striving, then Here she also loses the sense of life. And again, if you fall into living for your addictions, that's what always happens. If you're an alcoholic or a drug addict or a sex addict or a gambling addict, whatever your addiction is, and you're living for the stimulation you get from these addictions, you've decreased your time and effort for striving. And you will not get ultimate satisfaction. You will only get stimulation. And your life will be out of balance. So if the human being loses his or her striving, then he loses a sense of life. And that's why all the other addictions, you lose your sense of life. If the human being can no longer strive for anything at all, then in himself or herself, he or she feels with deadly might that he or she is no longer of use to anything. So all these other things in life are traps. They have to be balanced. The focus has to be on striving all the time. Let me continue here. And that, as a human being, he or she has become impossible. And it says here, and with Gewaltsamkeit, his or her own existence is forfeited. So if you don't focus on your striving, you're literally forfeiting your existence. Striving is the actual nature of the human being. However, if this nature is nullified, then the human being feels that he or she does not have a place in the world anymore, and that's why people are depressed and sometimes take their own life. And that's why we go through these ups and downs as we undermine the striving in our life. And it says you will feel like you have no place in the world anymore, and rather that he or she has to vanish from it. If the striving breaks down in the individual human being, then he or she becomes incapable of life, depressed with life, and suicidal. So there's the causes for suicidal feelings, which many people have. But were the striving of the entire humanity to collapse, that means all of the earth, if no single individual would strive for that which is higher anymore, not for evolution, not for the best possible absolute full development, then the entire world would collapse into itself and vanish without a trace, as if it never existed. Were the creation to end its striving, then it would vanish without a trace, and there would be no being, which is indeed fundamentally based in the striving. Without striving, no life, and without life, no striving. Without life and striving, no evolution and no being. Nothing would exist, because everything would have vanished into nothingness without ever finding the possibility of striving and thereby life. So the universal consciousness is striving for its evolution. And that's the purpose of our life. Eventually, we merge back with the universal consciousness and take all of our life experience and wisdom with it. Thanks for listening to the show. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.